You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, August 8th, 2024. Grandpa Dan streaming at RadioAlbion.com, kicking off another work week, kicking off another Monday. As always, I start off reminding you we have our Sven Longshank support links here on the Daily Nationalist. It's right here on the description page. I always encourage you to drop him a note. As a note on that, I expect we'll play it by ear. Today could quite possibly be the last day that I leave the Sven Longshank support links up here on the site. We're anticipating him moving to a supervised facility in the near future. So looking forward to that. It'd be basically like what we'd call a halfway house, but you know, he'll still be under supervision, but you know, he won't be in prison anymore. So we're looking forward to that. Looking forward to that happening. So I anticipate today will be the last day that I'll leave those links up here on the page. And I just say once again, I appreciate all of you stuck with us through this time. You know, I know it's been a while, and that's how these things are. You know, it's an endurance. It's a marathon, as it were. And again, I appreciate all of you sticking with us. It is Monday. It's Daily Nationalist. I know I've missed a couple Monday shows. I don't know if anybody's noticed or not, but I have missed a couple shows. Last week, I had some stuff going on Monday. IRL stuff comes up. Got to take care of business, you know. And as such, I didn't get a show done. Same the previous week on Monday. Had things come up. I try to make it a point, you know, my Parish of the Patriot show, I record it over the weekend. It's no problem. I can always find a spot, a time to record it. The Daily Nationalist, because it's kind of a current events, current happenings show, I try to always record it on the day of, so I'm as current as possible. The problem with that is it leaves a very small window. It goes up at 11 o'clock in the morning my time here. I'm in the central time zone here in the U.S., and so I have a pretty small window to get up in the mornings, get the show recorded, get everything cleaned up, edited, posted up, ready to go on the site. And when things come up, it's just unfortunately not possible. So I do appreciate it. I assume somebody missed it, not being up. I'm doing something a little different with today's Daily Nationalist show. It's not a change in format necessarily. It's just I don't have a news story to go off of. It's kind of like, doesn't it feel kind of like everybody's just kind of holding their breath, waiting to see, you know, the next shoe is going to drop? I mean, things continue to be kind of spicy in Britain. I've talked about that. I don't really want to go through that again. Everybody can kind of see what's going on. Of course, it's still complete news blackout here in the U.S. They're not talking about that. They're talking about the hurricane, which is if that's something new. And the Olympics, which nobody, I don't think anybody cares about the Olympics. That's what we hear about. I think the main thing everybody's kind of waiting to see what happens is to see Iran's response against Israel. What is going to be the response? I was seeing in the news that some people in Israel, they're building bomb shelters and things such as this. But everybody's just waiting for it to happen. I find it interesting that we're having this delayed response. And you know, it seems to me that the only two possibilities for a reason for that are either A, Iran was caught completely off guard of the latest Israeli antics, or they're going to do like last time. They're doing this, what I would call a coordinated response. And by coordinated, I mean they're getting in touch with the U.S. and letting them know we're going to hit here at this time so that not too much damage is done to try to keep from escalating it. I find it hard to believe that they're caught completely unaware of the latest antics from Israel, so I suspect we're going to see another response similar to the last one, where they coordinate it to try to keep things from spiraling out of control. This is interesting when you really think about it, because like I said, with last time, Iran was, you know, through proxies coordinating basically with the U.S. to put on this show, to launch some missiles and drones, make a point. The U.S. would shoot some down and, you know, do what they could do. Not too much damage, enough damage to say we struck them back. And it's like the U.S. and Iran, ironically, are kind of working together to try to keep it from spiraling out of control. Then you have Israel, which is apparently doing everything they can to escalate the situation, to drag the U.S. into a direct conflict with Iran and other groups in the Middle East. You have Israel come out and do these latest assassination strikes, this latest one of the Hamas person in Iran proper, in Tehran itself. And this was the guy who was working on negotiations on the Hamas end for a ceasefire, which, of course, sends a clear message that Israel's not interested in any sort of ceasefire. And since they're not interested in any sort of ceasefire, they're not interested in getting these hostages back. I said it before, you have to be sympathetic to the Israelis who have family members and loved ones who are currently being held hostage. They don't know if they're alive, dead, and their government has apparently no interest whatsoever in getting these people released. You would think that there would be some interest there, but apparently there is not. There's only interest in escalating the conflict. So it's we're always hearing here in the U.S., you know, our greatest ally ever. Israel's America's greatest, most solid ally. And yet our alleged most solid ally ever continues to make things more difficult, to make more work, to try to continue to throw fire, try to continue escalating the situation. And as a result of that, the U.S. is working with Iran to try to keep things from escalating and spiraling out of control. It kind of makes me think, you know, if you've ever had like a friend, you know, maybe back when you were younger, or if you are younger, you're a younger person, you know, and you go out, in places young single people go carousing about, drinking a little alcohol, going to parties, or perhaps going to drinking establishments. And you have a friend, and every time you go one of these places, a friend drinks too much and winds up getting into fights and dragging you into these conflicts. Pretty soon, you don't want to be friends with that person anymore. Reminds me of that. You know, the U.S. is tied at the hip with Israel, and Israel keeps going. Every time they walk into the World Bar, Israel starts picking all these fights. And they're fights that they can't really win. They're counting on you to get drug into the fight with them. And you're like, no, I don't want to get drug into this fight. But it doesn't matter. They don't listen to you. And you normally, at some point, you would cut your friend loose and be like, you know what? You keep starting. You handle it. I'm not going clubbing with you any longer. But the U.S. continues to go clubbing with Israel. It keeps picking fights in all the bars. I don't know. You know, it just, you would think at some point in time, well, anyway, we know at some point in time, Israel's going to successfully get the U.S. drug into a conflict. I don't see any way around it. It was demonstrated with Netanyahu's multiple 50-something standing ovations in the U.S. Congress, who owns the U.S. government. So, you know, yes, individual actors in the government are fighting this, trying tooth and nail not to get drug into this. But at the end of the day, you know, your employer calls the shots. You know, the U.S. government is just the wagey government. Their supervisor, their owner is the Israeli government. So at some point in time, I don't see how the U.S. keeps from getting drug into this conflict. Like I say, I don't care about the Olympics. They want to, you know, keep talking about the Olympics. They keep putting it up on TV. I don't care. I can't imagine very many other people actually care about this. I saw an article that was funny, though, regarding this the other day. They said, you know, we got to move on. The Olympics are going to have to move on from just doing doping tests to doing DNA tests. And if you have male chromosomes, not letting people, you know, compete in the female athletic events, that's what we're down to. You know. And of course, I did a whole show on the ridiculous, blasphemous opening ceremonies. I was reading up another article from somebody today talking about it. And you have that. And apparently, I guess one of the opening ceremony MCs or whatever that did something was the rapper Snoop Dogg. And he had a Baphomet emblem on his neck or whatever. And I was thinking about how these people constantly, you know, not just this and this isolated thing, but on a broader scale, these people are constantly announcing and telling everyone who they are, you know, and all of these aspects, these people boldly and loudly proclaim who they are. You watch music videos and there's always satanic imagery in it. Always. You don't even have to look hard for it. They announce it. They wear jewelry with satanic emblems on it. They do all of these things. And yet, amazingly enough, it doesn't seem to matter. People just refuse to believe them. It's like somebody keeps telling you who they are. It would be like if somebody came up, if you took your kids to the church youth group and the church youth group leader, you know, kept telling you, I'm really into sex with kids. And you kept taking your kids anyway because you're like, oh, he's such a joker. You know, he's such a kidder. He's always making these jokes about how sex with kids is so hot. He's just a crazy kidder. I'm going to drop my kids off and go on about my business. It's kind of like that. These people announce very loudly in so many ways who they are, what they believe in, who they serve. And yet, people just shrug it off. They're just like, oh, they're just playing around. They're trying to be edgy. That's all. It's one big joke. And for some reason, all of these different people partake in the same exact quote-unquote joke time and time again. And see, I'm one of a mind that when people tell you who they are and what they're about, that you believe them. You take them. You take them at their word. Other things going on. The stock market, not looking so healthy. I saw where the stock market in Japan is not looking real bueno. Stocks going down. I've said for a while that one of the few things holding this charade together here in the U.S., but I think it extends to the rest of the collective West, you know, the satellites of America, because this all comes from America. You see these European vassal states doing things that are observably not in their own interest, deindustrializing, wrecking their economies, so on and so forth. And you know that all comes from the U.S. It all starts, the U.S. is like the sun in the center, and these guys are all just little satellites going around, just circling it. And one of the few things that's kept this thing held together is this perception of relative economic prosperity. That's why they run down countries that are doing well. They run those countries down and try to tell you how awful they are, how backward they are. They're hoping by doing that, you'll shrug it off when you see, you go down the street and see multiple homeless people. This you go down in small towns now. You can go through small towns now here in the U.S. and there's homeless people walking around the sidewalk, you know, just camping out in little towns, not just in the cities. It's everywhere. You're supposed to not notice that. They'll still tell you how a country like China is backwards and impoverished and just really, really awful. You just don't know how awful it is. They're trying to perpetuate the perception of relative economic prosperity because that's one of the few things holding this together. It's one of the few things that keeps people buying into the system. Kind of like how they're trying to keep everybody buying into the election thing. They're trying to keep people. They're trying to really, really stoke the election up. If you get Trump in there, are you going to get Kamala in there? And anybody that's got any life experience or pays any attention at all knows it's not going to change anything. Not really. I mean, there may be some surface changes. You might get some lip service out of the deal. But at the end of the day, policies will more or less stay the same. And it's been that way my whole life. You have these elections, they come around, they tell you it's the most important election forever because fill in the blank reason. And at the end of the day, nothing's going to change. They're throwing a fit right now accusing Venezuela of having a fake election. There's no evidence. You notice when people pointed out the election in 2020 and the blatant documented fraud taking place, not the nonsensical distraction claim, but things like literal evidence, video evidence. We all saw them running the election observers out and putting boards up on the windows and claiming, well, that was because of COVID. They shut the voting down and you had videos. People took videos of them bringing boxes of ballots, unloading them out of a box, out of the backs of vans. We had all of this. And when people pointed this out, the media said what? Oh, they're making these claims without evidence. Well, there was a ton of evidence. Now in Venezuela, the U.S. government, without evidence, is claiming the election was rigged. Now, I don't know. The election very well could have been rigged. But you can't help but say it's a bit of a pot calling the kettle black, is it not? We're the most, now everybody in the world knows we have the most ridiculous, laughable elections in this country. We might as well just have a reality show, you know, lock the candidates up in a house. Start off with like five candidates, put them in a Big Brother style house with the cameras. And then, like, you know, you can have like a competition, all these weird competitions. And whoever gets eliminated, you'll see who's going to be the president at the end of the show. Why not? It's basically what we're doing now and claiming it's these wonderful elections. They're really trying hard to keep everybody buying into this, you know, to try to buy into the system because, you know, things will get iffy once everybody throws up their hands. I said it on tomorrow. I've already recorded, obviously I've recorded tomorrow's show and I bring it up on tomorrow's show, but I'll go ahead and say it again here because I think it's a very relevant point. You know, the Tories just got, you have this new Labour government. Things are spicy in Britain. You have this new Labour government now that is having to deal with things being spicy there in Britain. And the Tories got just blown out, just wiped out. And it wasn't because people just woke up one day, changed their minds, and decided they really loved the policies being promoted by the Labour Party. It's just people quit buying into the system. That's, to me, when that happened, that was the big news from it. It wasn't, people didn't put the Tories in there for years and years and years and years, and then one day decide, you know what, I think these other guys have better ideas. No, they just got tired of being lied to. They got tired of every Tory administration that came in said they were going to stop immigration, they were going to curb immigration, they were going to do something, and then never did. They continued to just do the same things, the same policy. Finally, people quit buying into the system. And when people quit buying into the system, inevitably you're going to start seeing things like we're seeing in Britain now. That's what's on the other side of people throwing up their hands and saying, well, this voting thing isn't working anymore. People aren't listening. When they try to go out and peacefully protest, it doesn't change anything. Things start getting more unstable. We're not there in the U.S., and they're trying very hard. They're really playing up this Kamala versus Trump nonsense. All it is, they're trying to keep everybody bought into the system. I think we're down to here's your two hand-selected candidates. It's not like 2016. Trump has made a deal. I've said over and over again, you've been witnessing Trump publicly negotiating a deal. Most people don't do much deal making, so they don't recognize it. But Trump has been publicly negotiating a deal. I believe those negotiations are done and he's gotten basically the signatures that he needs. The other candidate obviously is already on board. So you wind up, we're back at the norm here in the U.S., which is you get candidate R, you get candidate D. And at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, can, you know, Team D might cheat to win the election. But as far as the election outcome, the real power players, the people that run things, which are not the people you're voting for, they don't care. They themselves have no reason to go in and cheat the election for one side or the other. Their job is to just make sure that your two choices are pre-approved. That's it. And that's what you've got once again here. You've got two pre-approved choices. Trump this time is not Trump in 2016, which was kind of an anomaly. Trump now has publicly negotiated the deal. So he's Team R's pre-selected candidate by the powers that be. And the Team D candidate was always going to be pre-selected. So now things are back to the normal. And as far as the ones who make the actual decisions, they don't care. Whichever one of them gets in there at the end of the day, they don't care. I mean, yes, there's factions that care one way or the other. But for the most part, they're not going to go in themselves to cheat the other. Now, Team D may still go in and cheat just because they can. But again, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Whichever pre-selected, as I said this on a recent Daily Nationalist show, the takeaway is to always understand that the people making the decisions are not the people you're voting for. So it's theater. It doesn't matter. And people will poo-poo that and they'll say, oh, you're just a naysayer, you know, you're just discouraging people so the Democrats will get in there. No, I'm just telling you the truth. I've seen probably more elections than a lot of you have. And I'm telling you, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Bill Clinton got in there. The difference between original George Bush, slim to none. It doesn't matter. All these people who are investing all of this emotional hope in Trump, this is the last hoorah. For these people, it's a personality cult. I've said that multiple times. It's a personality cult. They're investing all of this emotional currency and hope in Donald Trump. And what's going to be on the other side of that? If Trump gets in there, he's going to give them some lip service and talk about things. But you know nothing's going to actually change. Like I say, when he got in 2016... you know, that was an anomaly and still nothing changed. The system made sure that things kept going the way they always go. Well, this time he's made a deal. So I can assure you, nothing's going to change. Where are those people going to be at on the other side of that? You know, when they get over the euphoria of, you know, if Trump gets in there, when they get over the euphoria of our savior, our great orange hope, is now in there, he's going to turn things around, and things don't turn around. Things keep going the same. I suspect at first there will be denial, and they'll claim, oh no, you know, it's like the denial on steroids. It was the whole Q phenomenon. You know, trust the plan. You just don't understand what's going on behind the scenes. I remember at one point they were saying that Trump was not only still the president, he was currently like leading a Marine expeditionary force to overthrow the Chinese government or some nonsense. You're going to have, I suspect you would have a certain amount of denial, perhaps denial on steroids. But at some point in time, people are going to quit trusting the plan. And they're going to get brought back to the reality that it didn't matter. They put all of this emotional currency, this hope, and nothing changed. And if Donald Trump couldn't change anything, who else? Who's going to be the next guy in the next election that's going to turn the system and drain on its head and drain the swamp? J.D. Vance? Really? I mean, he might as well. This is such a laughable VP pick, but it's obviously who he was told he was going to pick. When they said who the contenders were for his vice presidential pick, they were obviously pre-selected picks. Honestly, the Indian guy, whatever his name is, I don't remember off the top of my head, but you know what I'm talking about, that was originally running to be one of the pre-selected candidates. The Indian guy would have been a more exciting choice. He might as well. Honestly, this J.D. Vance pick, he should have just gone ahead and picked Mike Pence again. He could have just gone back and picked Mike Pence again. And we have just done this whole thing all over again. I mean, once the Great Orange Hope doesn't bring about anything, and that's assuming that he wins the selection process, what then? If Trump doesn't get in there, if Harris gets in there, maybe it's close enough, Team D does some cheating, and she gets in there. What then? You know, it's already ludicrous that people that have been going around for 4 years now talking about how the last election was stolen are now saying, but we're going to do it again, and this time we're going to get a different result. That's already absurd enough. But if Harris gets in there, then what? Well, don't worry, in 4 years, we'll keep doing the same thing again. At some point in time, I don't see a way this plays out where the U.S. doesn't wind up today, or I'm sorry, in the future, where Britain is today, where you've got a growing number, an ever-growing number of the population that loses faith in the system, that comes to the realization that the system is illegitimate. The system doesn't represent them. It does not work as it's marketed to them to work. And there's no point any longer in supporting it and participating in it. Then what happens? People always, you always hear the whole thing of nothing ever happens. You know, and I always say true until it does. I mean, history is full of years and years and years of nothing ever happens. And then all of a sudden, it does happen. Something that's kind of like I heard a thing years ago, a pilot describing what it's like, you know, flying. And they said it was described hours and hours of boring monotony, followed by a few minutes of sheer terror when things change, when things don't go according to plan. That's how history works out. You have years, decades, years and years of nothing ever happens until it does. And then it happens very, very quickly. Sometimes things happen because events that are orchestrated start playing out and they get out of hand. These people think that they're able to manipulate and control. I believe they way overestimate their ability to do that, especially when you wind up with violent mobs in the street, like we're seeing in Britain now. Mob mentality is like a fire. You start off with a controlled burn. You think you go out and, we have droughts every summer in Texas. They act like it's climate change. We do this every year. They've been doing it every summer. My whole life has been like this. And things are hot and things are dry. That's why you got to have common sense. Where's me out? Because these counties here will put out burn bans. And before you burn your brush pile, you're supposed to check with the authorities to see if there's a burn ban on, so you know whether or not to burn. They do this because people are morons and they have no common sense. You should be able to look out there. You should be able to look out there and know whether it's safe to burn. If it hasn't rained in 6 weeks, it's 103 degrees, the grass is tall and it's dried up and brittle, it's a bad day. And there's a 30 mile an hour south wind blowing. If you light off your brush pile, you're a moron. You're going to set the world on fire. It's kind of how these people are. Sometimes they light off a controlled burn and they're confident they're going to be able to keep it from getting out of hand. But they don't realize that the grass is really tall and it's really dry and there's a 30 mile an hour south wind, or perhaps the winds are still when they light it off, but then things they don't expect to happen happen. A big gust comes along. They think they have it in one of those dirt devils. They're thermal tornadoes. They don't come out of the clouds. It gets so hot, and you have these thermals rising up off the ground, and they'll start spinning. And it looks like a little tornado. It's a dust devil. You know what it looks like. It's like the Tasmanian devil on the cartoons going right. It's like that. And it's a little tornado. You get a dust devil come up and it blows right through your brush pile and spreads the hot embers all over the place into the dry grass. And now all of a sudden you got a wildfire and you can't get in front of it. You want, things can get really unpredictable, especially when you're talking about angry mobs of people. That's probably one of the hardest things to get in front of, stay in front of, and control that is possible. Large, angry, ever-growing, violent mobs of people. You're starting to see the beginnings of that in Britain. And it's quite likely that the more people view the system illegitimately here in America, you could see that very same thing happening. I believe the grass is much drier and much taller here in the U.S. You know, so many different groups, different people, the government itself has pitted people, purposely pitted groups of people against one another and stoked up this confrontation to their own ends. And you know, it's going to make things that much worse. Plus, there's more guns in this country than there are people. The kindling is very dry. The winds are definitely coming up. And the people that are calling the shots and making these decisions, quite frankly, I don't think they're all that bright. In the background of all of this is what I pointed out before. One of the things that kept all this in check is the perception of relative economic prosperity. And now you got this situation where people are broke. People can't afford the bare necessities. People are buying groceries on their credit cards because they can't afford groceries anymore. And you just have this spiraling downward economy. You got tension stoked up. And once that last bit, once people finally get to that point where they throw their hands up and say, well, voting isn't going to fix it, so now what? And then all it takes is some event happening and things can get out of hand. Things can get out of control very, very quickly. Anyway, we'll wrap up. I hope you enjoyed today's visit. I know this isn't normal daily nationalist stuff. I was looking around. I've been looking around for a couple of days for an interesting news story. And really, at the end of the day, it was kind of more or less, you know, the same thing, you know, kind of hard to look for something that would be like, this is the new story I want to go with. This will be an interesting topic. And I did want to get a show in today, so I thought we would just kind of have a general discussion, state of the world as we look at it today. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I'll be back tomorrow, Parish of the Patriots. It'll be better than today's show. I promise it's pretty good. You want to check that out. Dr. Johnson will be up with the Orthodox Nationalists on Wednesday. I've gotten a peek of it. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I'll have that post up ready for you for Wednesday. And I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. It looks like it's going to be a good one. It's going to be one of those you're not going to want to miss. I'm just telling you. Dr. Johnson will be back Thursday with his Daily Nationalist. And I do have every intention to be back here Friday. I hope to bring Funny Fridays back. We'll see how it goes. I hope to do that, but I do plan to be back here on Friday to wrap up your week. I do hope you enjoy your week. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.